Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we unpack a stack of sources to uncover the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight for you. Think about it. Everyone, absolutely everyone, faces moments of deep disappointment, gnawing frustration, or outright pain. It's a fundamental, unavoidable part of being human. We've all been there, right? And we all will be there again.
It's true. Suffering isn't just, you know, an abstract concept we discuss. It's a profound lived experience that shapes us. Today, our deep dive explores how to approach that suffering, drawing powerful insights from a recent sermon that unpacked the ancient biblical text of 2 Corinthians 5.1:10.
Okay, so our mission today is to understand how to deal with hardship in a way that doesn't just overwhelm us, but actually provides hope and maybe a deeper understanding. Mm-hmm. We're working with this incredibly insightful sermon, and it brings these concepts to life with some really compelling personal stories.
Exactly. So let's begin with the foundational idea presented in our source, the origin of suffering itself. The sermon, well, it frames suffering primarily as a consequence of sin. When it mentions Genesis chapter 3, it's pointing to the biblical account of humanity's first disobedience, that moment from this perspective when everything intended to be perfect became marred and scarred almost every area of life.
Right. And yet, despite sin being the cause of all this pain, the sermon emphasizes God's sovereignty. This means that even in the middle of suffering, God is described as being in control of all things, capable of using these disappointments and hardships for our ultimate good. It's an idea echoed in scripture like Romans chapter 8, which talks about all things, even the difficult ones, working together for good for those who trust God.
Mm-hmm. And this brings us to the core lens, the sort of big idea for today. Suffering is caused by sin, but God gives us hope through the resurrection. This isn't just like a theological statement. It's presented as a framework for living.
Okay, and to really ground this idea, our source shares a deeply personal story from the speaker's own life, a journey through disappointment during his Air Force basic training. Picture this. You're in your last week of basic. You've learned the book. You know all about military rank and saluting protocols. You're ready for your final deployment orders.
Yeah, and military protocol, especially saluting, is absolutely drilled into recruits. It's about respect, discipline, understanding the chain of command. A tiny lapse, well, it can have really disproportionate consequences.
And he experienced exactly that. He gets his orders, wasn't thrilled, but he's trying to keep a good attitude. He's walking back to his squadron, probably relieved to be almost done when a car drives by. It's the base commander's car. Now, he knew you saluted officers when you walked past them, but he admitted he never read the specific rule about saluting an officer's car.
Oh, wow. A seemingly minor omission.
Right. But in that environment, it became a significant infraction.
I can imagine.
It certainly did. The base commander, a colonel, stops, gets out, and starts yelling at them. Our speaker is completely dumbfounded. He thought it was over, but nope. The consequence. He's sent back 2 weeks. Has to restart basic training with a new group, changing his initial deployment orders. His whole God's got a plan attitude quickly turned into anger at himself, at the base commander. Why did they have to stop? Even at God, you know, thinking, this isn't what I signed up for.
Totally understandable reaction.
But here's the profound twist. After those 2 extra weeks, he returned to the processing center, and his duty assignment had changed. He actually got his best choice.
No way.
Yeah.
And this is the powerful insight he gained over time. He realized God was at work in that difficult situation. What felt like a setback, a suffering, was actually used to guide his career and life in unexpected positive ways. The nugget here, the takeaway, is that God can use sufferings and some of the disappointments in our lives to get us where he wants us to be. Mm. Sometimes our biggest frustrations can be our most direct routes to purpose.
It's incredible how a moment of deep frustration can later be seen as a pivotal, positive turning point. That personal journey perfectly illustrates the shift in perspective Paul brings to the Corinthian church. He's advising them on how to navigate their own hardships, building on their understanding of an eternal hope.
Indeed. Paul planted this church, but now his authority and ministry are being challenged. He's also correcting an idea called Greek dualism, which was pretty prevalent at the time.
Yeah.
This belief taught that the physical body was essentially a prison, and suffering was something to be escaped from, something inherently bad that trapped the spirit.
Okay. But Paul offers a powerful counter-narrative, doesn't he? He explains that the Christian hope isn't about escaping suffering, because in this sinful world, well, it's unavoidable. Instead, he shifts the focus. It's about finding renewal and true hope through resurrection, anchoring their hope in an eternal dwelling with God. So it's not about avoiding pain, but about how you view it and what you're looking forward to.
Exactly. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul kind of sets the stage for this by saying, our outer body is wasting away. This light and momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory. With that context, he offers three core ways to deal with suffering.
Okay, the first way to deal with suffering, according to Paul in 2 Corinthians 5:1-4, is to look to what is eternal. He uses this really vivid analogy of a tent versus a building.
Right, and as a tent maker himself, Paul intimately understood the nature of tents. He uses the tent to represent our earthly home or our physical bodies. Think about a tent. It's flimsy, thin, mobile, and definitely not designed to withstand a major storm.
Mm-hmm.
It's temporary.
Mm-hmm. Temporary. And he contrasts that with a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. This building is solid, like a rock foundation that will stand secure against any storm. The profound insight here is that our fragile, suffering bodies aren't the ultimate reality. God promises a new, eternal, glorified body. And that changes everything about how you perceive your current physical struggles.
It really does. Paul also mentions groaning twice in these verses. This groaning isn't merely physical discomfort. It's a deep longing for the original state of perfect harmony with God, a powerful acknowledgement that suffering is not what God intended for humanity. It's like a primal sigh for a world without sin.
That makes so much sense. And while we're looking to the eternal, the source also highlights the practical support the church provides in suffering, like providing a meal to help that family in a time of need, or working together to help others see the eternal perspective. It's crucial to remember that this isn't about dismissing suffering or suggesting it can be eradicated by a good church or by simply being more spiritual. Support helps you through it, not out of it entirely.
Well said. And to illustrate this eternal perspective, our source shares the incredible story of Chuck Colson. He was notoriously known as the Hatchet Man from the Richard Nixon administration, described as tough and smart and ruthless.
Yeah, a formidable figure during Watergate. But his life took an astonishing turn. While facing Watergate charges, a friend gave him C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. Reading it led him to recognize his need for a savior. He pleaded guilty, and after 7 months in prison, he started Prison Fellowship, which became one of the largest prison ministries globally.
His transformation is truly remarkable. His powerful takeaway, often quoted, perfectly aligns with looking to the eternal. The real legacy of my life was my biggest failure. My greatest humiliation being sent to prison was the beginning of God's greatest use of my life. The key insight here is that God can profoundly use what we perceive as our greatest setbacks, not just for his glory, but as the very springboard for our most impactful work and purpose. It shifts our focus from earthly failure to eternal significance.
Wow, that's a powerful, almost counterintuitive thought. Okay, moving on. The second way Paul counsels the Corinthians to deal with suffering, found in 2 Corinthians 5:5-7, is to trust in what God is doing.
Right. Paul says, "He who has prepared us for this very thing is God." This means God is not removed, even in the midst of our suffering. He's actively involved. And what's crucial is that God gives us the Spirit as a guarantee, or like a down payment.
A down payment. So this guarantee means we have God with us when we're going through our suffering. It's not just a promise, but concrete proof that God will one day bring us to be with him forever. This, the sermon argues, is the basis for Christians to be always of good courage.
It's a profound idea. But Paul also acknowledges the immense difficulty of this, reminding us to walk by faith, not by sight. When suffering is hard, when fear, hurt, and disappointment are just screaming at you, it takes faith to believe that God's promises are true. It's a battle between what you feel and what you believe.
That sounds incredibly challenging in the thick of it. I know for myself, it's often the hardest part when you're in the midst of a struggle. How does the sermon suggest we practically lean into that faith when our feelings are screaming otherwise? And speaking of challenging situations, the source brings up the remarkable story of Corrie ten Boom and her sister Betsy in a World War II concentration camp.
Yes. Their shelter was infested with fleas, making the already unbearable conditions even worse. Corrie found it repulsive. But Betsy, incredibly, challenged her to give thanks for everything, even the fleas. It seems absurd, right?
It does, giving thanks for fleas. And yet, the surprising revelation that came later was that the fleas actually kept the guards out of their shelter. They prevented the horrific abuse that other prisoners suffered because the guards didn't want to get infected themselves.
It's an astounding example of how God is using that for good, even in some of the worst situations. The insight here is that it takes walking by faith, not by sight, and trusting in what God is doing. You don't always see the good in the moment, but But faith allows for that unseen possibility to be real.
That's a powerful testament to perspective. Okay, now, the third way Paul instructs the Corinthian church to deal with suffering in 2 Corinthians 5.8 to 10 is to aim to please him. Paul tells them, whether we are at home or away we make, it our aim to please him.
This is about our ultimate purpose, our driving motivation. Paul himself wrestled with this, as we see in Philippians 1.25, where he says, to live is Christ and to die is gain. He recognized that God leaves us here for a reason, because I have work to do here.
Yeah.
It's this paradox, the desire for the peace of eternity balanced with the call to serve right now.
Right. And this directly challenges a misconception sometimes taught by some groups within that they call themselves Christians. The idea that if you are a Christian, suffering is eradicated, or that you will always be healthy and wealthy. Mm-hmm. The sermon is very clear. This is just not true. It's a false hope that sets people up for deep disappointment.
Absolutely. And to underscore that, the source shares the powerful story of John Piper, a famous preacher who was diagnosed with cancer in 2006. His perspective was unique and profoundly challenging. Huh? He asked, how can I use cancer to glorify God?
Wow. He even wrote an article the night before his surgery called Don't Waste Your Cancer, outlining 10 powerful truths. One of them was, you will waste your cancer if you do not believe that it is designed for you by God. That's a staggering statement, implying purpose in even the most terrible circumstances.
It is. Piper's definition of victory wasn't about the physical outcome. He famously said, cancer doesn't win if you die. Cancer wins if you fail to cherish Christ. The core lesson here is that the focus isn't on overcoming suffering or its outcome, but on how you respond in it.
Mm-hmm.
Aiming to please Christ in everything that he does, knowing God is in control of all of this.
Yeah.
The nugget is that suffering isn't wasted if it brings you closer to your ultimate purpose.
So it's not about being apathetic or just shutting down and ignoring suffering, because that's not pleasing to Christ either. It's about an active, purposeful response.
Exactly. And the sermon reminds us of the profound truth that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil.
Mm-hmm.
This reinforces the critical importance of our response to suffering, not just for our peace now, but for our ultimate accountability.
Now, if we're talking about suffering, especially undeserved suffering, we have to talk about someone who did not deserve to suffer, but did so fully, Jesus. His suffering went far beyond the physical beatings on the cross.
Absolutely. The deepest anguish Jesus felt on the cross was bearing the weight of the sin and the wrath for sin that was going to be on his shoulders. Think of it as taking on the full just consequence and separation that our wrongdoing deserves, so we wouldn't have to face it ourselves. This was the profound reason for his cry. My God, why have you forsaken me? He suffered on our behalf so that we could have a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm. And the source reminds us that Christian communion, or what some call the Lord's Supper, is an outward manifestation of a spiritual communion. It's a powerful act where participants look back with thanksgiving to Jesus's death, look around with love at the community, look up with supplication, and look forward with anticipation of his return. It's a complete response to that ultimate suffering, embodying all the elements we've discussed.
That's a great way to put it.
So what does this all mean for you listening in? This deep dive has shown us that suffering is a reality, a universal part of life. But through an eternal perspective, trusting in God's presence and plan, and aiming to please him in our response, even the hardest moments can lead to hope and purpose.
Yeah, so maybe the final thought to leave you with is this. Considering what we've unpacked about suffering and hope, how might shifting your perspective from merely overcoming a challenge to responding with purpose change how you approach a current difficulty in your own life?